Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and there's a number of matters we want to talk about today. We definitely want to be talking about what's going on with the Canadian government and the Canadian Parliament in relation to its China and the U.S., which are where we're finding really dramatic increase in hostility, emanating actually from the U.S. side, as we've said on this show previous. And there seems to be an idea in Canada that we will do what the U.S. does. I mean, if you are to follow the editorial line of the Toronto Star, notice the commentary, CBC, read the Globe and Mail, everyone is falling in line without a word of caution. Indeed, there, wherever the U.S. is starting a fire, Canada seems to be throwing wood on that fire, sometimes gasoline, actually. So we'll be talking about that during the show. And I guess we should turn this into also some simple slogans. We would like to see an end to the illegal, criminal, brutal sanctions coming from Washington against countries like Venezuela, Islamic Republic, Cuba, and a number of other countries. Again, Canada's silent on these things. A theme of this program is end the sanctions, behave like a member of the international community, uphold international law, fight for the institutions, particularly the United Nations. That's certainly part of our mission. And we would like to see the return, the release of Meng Wanzhou, a Chinese businesswoman who also is a Canadian businesswoman. Her company, Huawei, has many thousands of employees in Canada. The company also invests heavily in research in Canada. It's had a wonderful working partnership with Canadian business, but because the United States is unable to compete in a free market, they've chosen to weaponize trade, and at the orders of the President of the United States, Meng Wanzhou, is being detained in Canada. So we are calling for her release. I think we're going to do the opposite of what the Globe and Mail is doing. The Taylor Report would say that Meng Wanzhou has been detained in Canada for more than 600 days. The Globe and Mail thinks it's important to say that two Canadians accused of lawbreaking, of espionage, are being held in China for 500 and some odd days. That's true. Meng Wanzhou has not been accused of it, and she's been detained. She is not at liberty. To say that she has a big home doesn't change anything. Her home is China, and Canada should never have followed the dictate of Donald Trump and Mr. Bolton and in holding her in order to try to take advantage of a business problem, failure of the U.S. to be able to compete with the company of which Meng Wanzhou is an officer. Anyway, I wanted to underline that. Taylor Report is calling for the release of Meng Wanzhou and to resumption of ordinary peaceful relations with China and stay out of the company of the U.S.-led Western states who are attempting to recolonize or redictate to Asia, but particularly China, as they did a century ago. By the way, this is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. You can find us on SoundCloud, the Taylor Report, and also on Facebook. I think it's Facebook, taylor-report.com. You can, I know you'll find us if you're looking. So further to these matters, Tony, I wanted to raise with you, I know that you respect very much the British publication, The Lancet. You're aware of their work. I think The Lancet is regarded as probably the most prestigious medical journal, English language. Here is their latest issue, and they say the following. China has largely controlled COVID-19. A country of 1.4 billion people and a size similar to Europe or the USA now reports only clusters of cases rather than widespread community transmission. China has been widely criticized for its role and responsibilities during the pandemic because of censorship, transparency, and human rights concerns. But the rest of the world can still learn from China's successes in bringing its outbreak under control. China's response shows the importance of domestic research and public health capacity. Huge investments have left China much better prepared for COVID-19 than for severe acute respiratory syndrome. Better prepared than they had been previous. When SARS broke out in 2002, China was unprepared initially, especially as the pathogen was unknown. When COVID-19 emerged in December 2019, Chinese scientists were quickly able to identify the virus and shared genomic sequencing data internationally on January the 11th, 2020. By the end of January, doctors from mainland China and Hong Kong had characterized the clinical features of patients with COVID-19. Person-to-person transmission, genomic characteristics, and epidemiology, warning the world about the threat of COVID-19 with research papers published in The Lancet. China has been in the forefront of vaccine research. And I could go further, but I think that's sufficient to say something here about this that we all need to think about and know. That we're talking about fighting COVID-19, and people are still arguing odd sideline arguments, whether they have masks, whether they have them in certain situations, what distancing is, and what the response, like California now has a real emergency, and they talk about lockdowns. Here we are. I mean, this to me reflects, unfortunately, Western parochialism, because China exists. China has a health system. They have experience. Why don't we say, could we invite them and the World Health Organization, to Ottawa, to Washington, to Los Angeles, and say, you guys have been through this. They're sharing their experiences, by the way, around the world. But we are locked in an ugly, parochial, narcissistic, let me find all the words, conceited. We are suffering the same conceit that the famous Donald Trump suffers. We can't be wrong. We must be right. We mustn't be seen to be listening to anybody else. And if we have something, we will not share it because it's ours. We say that the Russians are trying to steal our science. China is trying to steal our science. Here's my problem with that. I don't see any evidence there's any science to steal. You do have an offer of cooperation on the table. The Chinese have not agreed to have a Cold War. They have not agreed to have a hot war. But they say, and Russia too, that all these problems can be worked out. But the one called COVID-19 is an international issue. They care about what happens in the U.S. Europe at this moment cannot take in, will not take Americans. You can't travel there. You're going to have a lot of trouble doing business if you don't get this under control. But to do that, you're going to have to confess that you're part of humanity, that you have a shared scientific medical problem that it belongs to all of us. So, to my mind, these Lancet articles are like a little isolated island in the discourse of the West, because otherwise I am reading that we have to do something about some a minority group which is prospering, frankly, in China, called the Uyghur. We have to worry about whether or not Chinese law applies to Hong Kong, which is part of China. And meanwhile, we have the devil has us by the throat, that is public health risk, and we share with an opportunity to share with China when they have shown, as the Lancet says, an ability to deal with this. They actually, and it's not that the Lancet indicates they're not perfect, but let's be objective. They have it in hand, and they're holding out a hand to us, and we are, even our Canadian Parliament, is holding committee hearings where we mock the World Health Organization. We mock a Canadian doctor who works at the World Health Organization and talk about him as though he is somebody who has to be brought here to be face the question, why are you nice to the Chinese medical system? So we're in a dangerous corner, don't you think?
Yes, the editor of The Lancet has been a remarkable voice on these subjects, but of course, it's not picked up by the major media. You don't hear very much. His comments don't get reported very much, or they're not, they don't hit the headlines, and that's it's a real shame. The leaders of Canada, the United States, the UK, acted like they were somehow immune. You know, oh, it's not happening here. When you're right when you say there's no science to steal, because that's a completely non-scientific attitude. I don't see it. It's not coming here. You know, we're immune from that because we're superior types of people or something. One little anecdote. I read a report on the Indian state of Kerala, and the Minister of Health asked scientists on January the 20th, is this virus going to come here? And they said, yes, it is. And they immediately took the steps that were required, and the steps that China was already showing worked, and largely protected the millions of people who live in that state. And of course, they also put a premium on having a public health system, as Vietnam does, and China, and the countries that have been successful. But the very first step was even recognizing that it was a virulent spreading pandemic that needed to be taken seriously if you care about the people. And our leaders, you know, I'm sure we've done better now than the United States, pretty low bar, I guess. But initially, our governments didn't show that they cared about the people. They didn't care about our elders when they allowed corporations to take over long-term care homes and use them as a mechanism of creating profits for themselves. Long-term care homes in Ontario have taken tens of millions of dollars of profit in the last few years. And they did that by providing inferior care and low wages for the people who worked there and insufficient staff. And the inevitable result was that staff and residents got infected and died in the thousands.
Yes. By the way, the Kerala government, to give it full credit, is a socialist government. The core of that group is explicitly Marxist. Now, those who are our superiors, social superiors, write in the papers and run the universities, have a little problem with this. It's illustrated beautifully in my mind by a page one article in the Globe and Mail, in which a writer, I think his name is Vanderclip, is telling us about China and why, of course, they're a new kind of problem. And he says that the political environment in China is changing with a national leadership that has explicitly rejected Western values and has overseen a wide-ranging effect of effort to expunge foreign thinking. Now, get a load of this. That's the Globe and Mail. I mean, that is subliterate. The Communist Party of China, he should check with Pompeo. Pompeo says that the Chinese government is a communist government. As far as I know, he's probably right about that. The Globe might look into what that means. The founding thinker of communism, his name is Karl Marx. He's, I think, from the West. If Germany, Britain, and France make up part of the West, Mr. Vanderclip might want to look into that. He's also, by all accounts, that is, if you're literate, you went to school, you can look it up. He's the founder of social science and the idea, actually, of the science of society. That yes, you can organize a society and you can produce things as need, according to need, and you can sustain populations and you don't have to have classes. He's a Western-based thinker whose thought is universal. This is the part that bothers Mr. Vanderclip. He wants to talk about the rejection of the West, but he's talking about one of the greatest minds, allegedly, of the Western world, and says that China is throwing away Western values. Actually, at this moment, what he's describing is a clear affirmation by the Chinese Communist Party, but also their population. I should tell listeners that according to a Newsweek study, China is probably the most popular government, popular support, enjoys the highest popular support of any government on earth. And yes, it's based on the universal values of a man who lived and worked in the West, wrote in German, French, and English. And it's just remarkable that we could find ourselves where a government with a hammer and sickle behind it, and the name Karl Marx written on their hearts, is described by a Globe and Mail novel as giving up on expunging Western thought. it's hard to you couldn't make it worse. I should be a comedian to do this. You have to be John Oliver or somebody. But anyway, so this is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. We are on SoundCloud and we are also on Facebook. I think we have about 5 minutes perhaps remaining. I want to emphasize again that this apropos of our discussion of Demetri Lascaris, Sid Ryan, there are many voices, by the way, in Canada. I wish the labor movement was more in tune with those voices, I mean, perhaps it will, coming out of COVID-19, become once again a class conscious movement that does not echo the point of view that comes from the Liberal Party, which is a business party. Its ties are to the corporations, as Tony has been outlining here. The notion, the reason you have a union, for example, is that you don't trust the employer, and you have very good reason. They treat, if they can, labor as at their own whim. They can open and close factories. They can employ people. They discriminate against them. They cheat them out of their wages. They put them in dangerous working conditions, and dare them to either quit or risk their lives. That's why you have a union. So we don't need unions that say, okay, now we're protecting the workers, but we think the government's just fine. And if they make a resolution on Venezuela, heck, we'll do the same thing. They actually have to be prepared to say, we'll walk off the job if you mistreat that country. If you try to gang up on Mexico, if you try to gang up on Cuba, we'll walk off the job. There are places in the world where that is done. We've had the experience, and I know, Tony, you're aware, that longshoremen on the West Coast of Canada and the United States, they've refused to unload ships because those ships were associated with Saudi Arabia or with the bombing of Gaza or with South Africa. Now that's internationalism. That's an awareness of that the companies, the capitalist class, which those companies are part of, have their policies, and the workers have their own policies. And they meet on and look after their interests. We should meet, look after our interests. And today, we're in a situation where COVID-19 is our enemy, and we have workers' organizations, we have socialist governments, who say, yes, we're here to serve the people, and we're going to do what it takes. And it'd be wonderful, and it's to be a goal to be sought after, if we were echoing what they say and telling the world, they say this, why can't we do the same? Why can't we have the kind of commitment and diligence that we see in Cuba, in Venezuela, and China, in taking on the protection of the population? And yes, they are advanced. They definitely are advanced. They're not backward. And that's because they have formed governments that are done in the name of all the people. I remember I personally was standing about 30 feet from Fidel Castro giving a speech once on July 26th. He said, todos los pueblos del mundo, all the people of the world. It's remarkable to have leaders and countries where that's what's on their minds. I'm all for renaming the country with not just the name, but flesh and blood, People's Republic of, and then put in the country. The commitment to the people. It's put it in the name so that the people can say, you call yourself a people's government. Where's my job? Where's my education? Where's my medicine? I'm part of the people. But if you say, oh, we're the royal this and the royal that, and he's the Lord, and what's his name's going to get a garter for free? That's poison. That is, you're being medieval. You're out-trumping Trump. These are times to think about, all right, we fight a common foe, which is disease. Why don't we continue the fight, spread it out, and let's make a mutually supportive state and society amongst others, where the wealth is shared, and the principle is serve the people, look after their interests. This is the Taylor Report. I want to thank Tony Leah for being our guest, and we will see you next week.